set the brain in a slightly different meter. So you can try to follow this. It's made it possible.
ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्तस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदामहं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं नमः विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीति नामिनि नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्णा. So today we'll discuss on the topic of what is real freedom. So this is also related to the Republic Day that is coming up soon. It is the day when we made our own free constitution, as they say. And also it is related to the latest social scientist issue that was released. Some of you may have got it. It was entitled Bound to be Free. Can we turn this around, please? So in the modern times, people are very much fanatical about freedom. They say we must be free. No rules, no regulations. Whatever we want to do, whenever we want to do, however we want to do, we should be allowed to do that. And that is freedom. And all cultures, all traditions, and especially religions that give some regulations, some restrictions, they say this has to be rejected. Why should we be deprived of enjoyment, of freedom? So they say restrictions are life denying, enjoyment denying, prohibitive. Reject them all and become free. So we see this with respect to even the not only in terms of eating whatever we want people to eat, non-vegetarian food or drink or smoke, but especially with respect to premixing of the sexes. So all this is going on in the name of freedom. And people think, if anybody tells me, don't do this, if anybody restricts me, a restriction means they're taking away my freedom. However, actually, restriction is not opposed to freedom. Restriction is a prerequisite for freedom. Imagine that somebody is on the terrace of a 50-story building and the parapet wall is not yet constructed and he's walking off. And so you go and tell him, don't walk. Why are you restricting me? I'll be free to walk wherever I want. Okay, you're free. You'll fall down and break your leg and there is all freedom to walk gone away. Isn't it? Or if somebody is about to drink poison, say, don't drink. Who are you to restrict me? I am free to do whatever I want. Okay, be free to drink the poison and then lose your life, which is the ultimate loss of freedom. Or if somebody is sick and the doctor tells him, your digestive system is very weak, don't eat any heavy foods. Who are you to restrict me? Okay, if you are not restricted, then now at least you can eat some light food, but afterwards you will have to survive on soups or then on saline, or ultimately you will not survive at all. So if the restriction is not followed, whatever freedom we have, that will also go away. So at least now I have the freedom to eat light foods. But then if I don't follow the restriction, even that light food restriction goes, light food freedom goes away. Then liquids, and even that will go away if the digestive system gets further, then saline. So our restriction is not opposed to freedom, it is a prerequisite for freedom. Of course, all restrictions are not necessarily prerequisites for freedom. There are two extremes. Whatever restrictions we have to follow them. Or whatever restrictions are given, just reject them. Both are extremes. There are some restrictions which are well-intentioned and intelligent and even necessary, which have to be followed. So therefore, the idea that we will be free, which is being propagated so much in the world today, freedom is actually an illusion. Because let us analyze this at several levels. So people say, no, why should be there the restriction of marriage? No, anybody can form relationship with anyone and enjoy with anyone. Let us be free. And let us enjoy life. Okay, somebody says like that. How much can a person enjoy? Imagine there were no religious restrictions, there were no legal restrictions, no cultural restrictions, as it is to some extent in the West. Are the people enjoying unlimitedly? And are they happy lifelong? Are they?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Because even if we say I will reject all rules and regulations, there is still a restriction. And that restriction is imposed by our own body. Because the body's capacity to enjoy is limited. Say a person is the owner of a 5-star hotel. And now he has no restriction on how much he can eat. If a customer goes there, he has a restriction depending on how much money he can shell out. But the owner has no restriction. But still, can he be eating 24 hours of the day for the rest of his life and enjoying? So then what about that restriction? Can we escape that? So, if we say that I will not follow any rules and regulations and I will just be free. No, we cannot be free. The body restricts us. And no matter what we do, we cannot escape that restriction. This has to be clearly understood to recognize in which direction we should progress for real freedom. So, Krishna explains what is the nature of material happiness. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. Samsparshaja bhoga means the contact of the senses and the sense objects. Or in the 18th chapter, he says, 38th verse, that Vishay Indriya Sanyogad. And the senses and the sense objects come in contact with each other. Then there is enjoyment. There is initially enjoyment, and afterward that enjoyment turns into misery. But what people call as enjoyment is a result of contact of the senses and the sense objects. And people think freedom means nobody should restrict our access to the sense objects. Whichever sense object I want, I should get it and I should be able to enjoy it. The freedom in the modern society means unlimited access to the sense objects. That's what people call as freedom. And most people think, I am not able to enjoy life because I don't have access to the sense objects. Either because the culture is restricting me or because my pocket is restricting me. I don't have sufficient money. But whatever it is, people think that if I would have enough money and there would be a free society, then I would have unlimited access to the sense objects and then I could enjoy life. But even if we had unlimited access to sense objects, the limitation to our happiness is caused not only by the lack of the sense objects, but also by the limitation of the senses themselves. The senses have a limited capacity to enjoy. The stomach has this much capacity, and once it's filled, we can't do anything about it. Now people try to take vomiting pills. After their stomach is full, they take a pill to vomit all the food out, and then again eat more food. It's a disgusting ritual. And the Egyptian pharaohs specialized in this. They got their physicians to make special pills which would lead to painless vomiting. And they would have golden bowls in which they would eat food, and they would have golden bowls in which they would spit out their vomit and eat more food. But then all of them had health problems because of this unnatural eating. So we may try artificially to extend the body capacity, but it doesn't work. Or with respect to sex, which is continuously portrayed in all the hoardings, the movies, the magazines, as the ultimate source of enjoyment. The capacity of the body is so limited. It's like a sponge filled with water. Squeeze it once, so much water comes out. Squeeze it second time, all water comes out. 10th time, just squeeze it and get only the pain of it. We can't do anything about it. Similarly, the body's capacity to enjoy is limited. And therefore, no matter how free a person makes the society, or how rebellious against society he becomes and thinks, I am becoming free, he's restricted by the body. Okay, then somebody may say, okay, I cannot escape the body's restriction. But why restrict myself further? I will enjoy to the limit of what my body allows me to enjoy. What is the result of that? Then such enjoyment binds us mentally. Binds us mentally means that whenever there is some pleasure that comes from sense gratification, that impression gets very deeply rooted in our mind. And therefore, again and again we desire the repetition of that impression. And because of that, our mind drags us again and again to that activity. Just like a drunkard. He may think, oh, I cannot drink unlimitedly because I go unconscious or whatever. But I'll drink as much as I want. Okay, he can drink as much as you want. But then what is the result?
Attachment.
He becomes so attached, he can't do anything. Bhogaishwarya saktana taya aparita chetasam. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 2nd chapter 44th verse that aparita chetasam, the consciousness is caught away. No, people in this world appear to be free, moving here, going on bikes and cars and planes, but all of them are bound. Bound because their mind is bound to desires. And wherever they go, they have to find the object for their enjoyment. Just like a drunkard. He may go to from India to America or Russia or Australia or Africa, he has to find a drinking beer bar and he has to go and drink. So he appears to be physically free to go wherever he wants, but mentally he is bound. So the result of unregulated enjoyment is that we become mentally bound. And this mental bondage, it becomes over a period of time a torture. Torture because the mind is continuously dragging us. Asha pasha shatair baddha, Lord Krishna discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. People are bound by the desire, and the desires are pulling them, dragging them constantly. So the desires whip us internally. Come on, give it to me, do it, give it to me. And people become fed up by that. So that is what eventually is called as addiction. That means people try to enjoy as much as the body allows, and then they want to enjoy continuously, and the mind is constantly demanding. So this is mental bondage. And as devotees, we need to be clear in the philosophy that if somebody tries to enjoy unlimitedly beyond what God has ordained in the scriptures, the result is the mind becomes bound. So once Srila Prabhupada was asked, he was saying God realization is with respect to the soul, and it's sex with respect to the body. So if somebody has illicit sex, how does that stop the soul from becoming realized? They do different things. So Prabhupada replied, yes, the soul and the body are different. But if your consciousness is caught up in finding where will I get the next object to enjoy, then you cannot think about God. The soul and the body are together in one unit. And if our body and mind are attached to a particular kind of enjoyment, then our consciousness is caught up in that. And that's how we become bound. So we all know the example of the fish who is caught by the bait. So now, what is it that is caught by material nature? When material nature places a sense object in front of us, what she catches is our mind. And when the sense object comes, our mind gets caught. Just like a drunkard, you know, he may be going from his home to his office. And on the way there is a bar. So as soon as he's passing the bar, his mind is caught. His mind is already inside the bar. Caught, and he's not able to bring it out only. Isn't it? And the more he's addicted, it's not that he has to pass the bar. Even when he's at home and starting to go out, his mind is already in the bar. And even when he somehow reached the office, his mind is still in the bar. The mind is bound. And the more a person tries to enjoy unrestrictedly, the mind becomes more and more bound. And that's why when people say free, what is their freedom? Is they're free like a football. Free like a football to be kicked by lust, to be kicked by greed, to be kicked by anger, anywhere and everywhere. So when we nowadays, you know, romance is so much portrayed in the media, in the movies. But say a boy thinks, okay, I'll go and propose to a girl. Now what is a proposal? A proposal is just a refined word for begging.
Basically a boy is telling a girl,
I want you for my enjoyment. And please accept. He's begging. And when the girl refuses, he's heartbroken. So we are free like a football, we are free like a beggar. When we think we will enjoy through the body and the mind, then we need the external objects for enjoyment. And those external objects are not in our control. Just like a beggar has to beg for the alms, like that we have to beg for the sense objects. Now we may earn money and think I am earning money and then I am purchasing and enjoying. But still they are not in our control. And no matter how much money we have, the nature of the mind is to want what we don't have. Not only to want what we don't have, to want what we can't afford. That is the nature of the mind. So the mind will always keep us a beggar. So that's why when people say I'll be free, the nature of the desires is dushpuren analena cha. Dushpuren means it is pura means to complete. Dushpuren means that which is never complete, that which is never satisfied. Analena cha, it burns like fire. So therefore, when people say I'll be free to enjoy, when we enjoy, the desire to enjoy grows further. And therefore, because the desire to enjoy grows further, we want more. And we become, no matter how much we earn and acquire, still we want something which is beyond our capacity. And therefore, this freedom is freedom like a beggar. Always our mind will keep us as a beggar, wanting more and more and more. Beyond what we can have and beyond what we can afford. And why free like a football? Free like a football because when a person starts enjoying, he thinks I am in control. But then, lust or anger or greed, they take control of the person. And once they take control, the person is finished. It's like these desires are like a snowball. You know, initially somebody may think, okay, I'll just form a snowball and I'll push it down the ground. And he starts pushing it. And the snowball is small and it's just growing as it is going down. But then when it goes down, the snowball becomes so big, if it rams into a house, it can demolish the house also. It can become so big. So like that, when we enjoy, initially the desires appear very small. Okay, I'm in control. I want to enjoy, so I'm enjoying. But as we keep enjoying, the desires keep becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it's not that we want to enjoy. We are forced to do the activity. Actually, there's no enjoyment. So we are kicked like a football from wanting this object to that object to that object. So what is the freedom? This is not freedom at all. So actually, if you see drinking, what is the actual activity? People say cheers and they portray it as a very great enjoyable activity. But no, a person spends so much money, he drinks, and after he drinks, he makes a fool out of himself. You know, he blabbers nonsense, he acts foolishly, maybe falls into a gutter, and then next morning when he wakes up, his head is aching, his stomach is paining, he vomits everything out, and then somehow he comes back to his senses. And you know, if we were not conditioned by the modern outlook, you know, if a sane person from the Vedic times would come here, you know, he would say this drinking is not enjoyment, it is a modern ritual of self-torture. It is a modern ritual of self-torture. Just like there are rituals. People say, why do you do this ritual? You know, you go in front of the needy and move your hand like this and you offer something. What is it? It's a ritual. But this is a ritual. You take a drink and then it's crazy. What meaning is there? And it's even if a person doesn't believe in God, the ritual of worshipping the deity is harmless. But this is a ritual of self-torture. And this ritual of self-torture, we are so brainwashed that we think that is freedom. That is foolishness. So we have to have spiritual vision to understand that the way the media is portraying freedom, that is just an illusion. And why are they portraying it as freedom? So that they can exploit us. They can take away all our money. That's why. So, then what is real freedom? Real freedom comes at the spiritual level. Because the soul is eternal. And the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna is eternal. And their relationship is eternal. So when the soul awakens his real love for Krishna, and in that love, there is everlasting happiness. Now, what is this happiness that comes from love? Just like, say, when a mother loves a child, then she'll be at the home and the child may be in school. But she's thinking of the child, and just the thought of the child, she feels very happy. My child will be doing like this, my child will be doing like that. So here we see that when there is love, even the remembrance of the beloved brings joy to the heart. Now this is just a spark, because this relationship is temporary. Same, but the same principle when applied to our relationship with Krishna. When a devotee has developed his love for Krishna, just by remembering Krishna, he can feel great satisfaction in his heart. And Krishna performs many more wonderful pastimes than an ordinary child. And if the child's activities can give the mother so much happiness, then Krishna will perform such extraordinary adventurous activities. Urukramasya. Urukram means the great adventurer, Prabhupada translates at one place. So his activities can give so much satisfaction. Therefore, that when we develop our love for Krishna and we become free to remember Krishna always, that will be real happiness for us. Now we want to remember Krishna, but our mind drags us away from remembrance Krishna, of Krishna. So Kulashekhar Maharaj describes that. He says, Sukhataram aparam na jatu jane Hari charana smarana mruten tulyam. Hari charana smarana. The remembrance of Lord Hari, Amrut. It's such a nectar, tulyam. There is no other happiness that is comparable to that. So in the loving remembrance of Krishna, there is the greatest happiness. But now, we are bound and restricted from experiencing that happiness. Why? Because Bhogaishwarya Pasaktanam Taya Aparita Chetasam. We are sitting, we want to chant Hare Krishna, but our mind goes to some plan making. So actually, the chanting of the holy names can be a source of great nourishment and satisfaction. But we are deprived of that enjoyment right now. So when we practice the Krishna conscious regulations, now, a devotee, in the West, they have the slogan, born to be free. That means, I'm born, now I'll be free to do whatever I want. No, you're not born to be free, you're born to die. Martyanam kimuta shisaha. Where are we free? We're born, we're forced to grow old, get diseased and die, and take rebirth again. But a devotee, what is his situation? He's bound to be free. That means, he's bound. Bound means he follows certain rules and regulations. And what is the purpose? By following these rules and regulations, he will become free from the body and the mind to eternally enjoy life with Krishna. So, let us compare with the analogy now. From a school, a child wants to just play. And the parents tell him, stop playing, start studying. And he will think, what is this? You know, my parents are depriving me of enjoyment. So, when the parents tell that rule, first he sees that rule as restriction, as deprivation. So the first perception of the child of the rule is restriction. But then, when he sees the child, he sees other children playing, and then he sees while playing, you know, they start doing bad activities also. They start smoking, they start drinking, and then they fall prey to bad habits, and their life is ruined. And he says, oh, my parents were not restricting me, they were protecting me. But then as the child grows, then the same rules and regulations, he sees them not as a restriction but as protection. And then he grows further. And then he says, the parents, they told me not to play, but they told me to study. And both they had to force me. But now I have studied, now I have a career in front of me. I have a nice job and I have a respectable position in society. And my parents, by telling me to study, were actually empowering me. How many of you were forced by your parents to study in your childhood?
Almost everyone, is it?
So that is necessary. If the parents had not forced us, we would have been like vagabonds with no career ahead. So therefore, when the students, when the parents were forcing me to study, they were actually empowering me for a bright future. Similarly, in spiritual life, Krishna is like the father, supreme father, and his representative, the spiritual master, is also like our father, and the scriptures are like the mother. So when they give do's and don'ts, initially those do's and don'ts appear to be like restrictions. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. What is this? Where is the freedom? What is my life? But then gradually we start seeing, yes, by not engaging in all these self-destructive form of enjoyments, we are not being restricted, we are being protected. But then as we move forward and we practice spiritual life more and more, we start relishing happiness within. And not only can we relish happiness within, we can radiate that happiness to others by sharing the message of Krishna with them. And then we start understanding that actually not only was I being protected, but I was being empowered. And ultimately, the freedom that a devotee gets is not only at the spiritual level. At the spiritual level, when we leave this body and go back to the spiritual world, we'll be free eternally to enjoy with Krishna. But even before that, when a devotee restricts his enjoyment, what happens by that? He becomes mentally free. Mentally free means our mind becomes free from the torture of the desires. How many of you have the experience that if you have a morning, good morning program, we chant properly, we do Mangalarti, we hear the class, and then we go out, we don't feel troubled by temptation so much. How many of you have that experience? Isn't it? That's why all of you are taking the trouble of coming for the morning program. So we see practically that when we get that higher taste, then we become free mentally. Otherwise, when we don't get the higher taste, that means if we don't follow the rules of Krishna consciousness strictly, or don't follow it at all, then what happens? Then our mind is dragging us, mind is binding us. So the freedom that Krishna consciousness offers is not only in the next life. Krishna consciousness is not only a promise of happiness in the next world. Krishna consciousness is a promise of happiness even in this world. And we live a better quality life even in this world. So this is real freedom. Real freedom comes by practicing the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, by which we rise from the bodily, mental to the spiritual platform and develop our love for Krishna, and therein we enjoy real happiness. So, another example to explain the same principle of how restrictions bring real freedom. Suppose a person is sick. The doctor tells him two things: prescriptions and proscriptions, do's and don'ts. So, suppose a person has got, as I was telling earlier, the some digestive problem. Then, he says, doctor says, no solid foods for, no heavy foods for 1 week, and take this medicine. Bitter, but he has to take it. Now, if he says, no, who are you to stop me from enjoying? He goes on enjoying. And what happens? Two things, Prabhupada says. Enjoyment in the disease condition aggravates the symptoms and prolongs the duration of the disease. Srila Prabhupada writes, when a person's digestive system is collapsed, at that time he eats heavy food. And what will happen? Aggravate the symptoms. His health will become worse and prolongs the duration. That means he will have to suffer for more and for a longer time. Similarly, the scriptures explain that our current stage, where we are pure spirit souls, but we are misidentifying with the body, this is like a disease condition. And in the disease condition, when we try to enjoy, then that further aggravates and prolongs our material existence. The more we try to enjoy, the more the karmic reactions will come upon us, and the more we will have to suffer. And the more we try to enjoy, the more our minds will get wound up. And we will suffer not only the karmic reactions, we will suffer also from the desires in our own mind, which will go on for a long time. So we will suffer more and for a longer time. Now some people are a little foolhardy. Foolhardy means foolish, but daredevilishly foolish. What they say? I met one person. पिछले 30 साल से रोज सिगरेट पीता हूं, कोई कैंसर नहीं हुआ है, कोई हार्ट प्रॉब्लम नहीं है. It's like saying, from last 30 years, I'm carrying a time bomb. It has not exploded till now.
It's only a matter of time before it will explode. And past 30 years, I'm binding it more and more on my body. Now, even if I want, I can't take it out. So it's going to explode.
So sometimes when people enjoy and the reactions are not seen immediately, so they become very proud, I'm enjoying, and you are foolish, you're not enjoying. But we should have the Shastra Chakshu. Sometimes when we sow a seed, the fruit may not come immediately. Some seeds take longer time to fructify, but the fruit will surely come. So people who are unrestrictedly enjoying, some of them we may see them suffering right now. And some of them, we may see them enjoying, but they are going to suffer. The karmic reaction at a gross level, but at the internal level, even right now, the desires are torturing them. So therefore, real freedom means don't try to enjoy the disease condition. So there is pleasure. The pleasure is like scratching an itch. The nature of material pleasure and the nature of real freedom is perfectly illustrated through the example of the itch. When we scratch an itch, there is pleasure. But then that pleasure becomes a source of greater suffering. Because then the itch becomes bigger, this rash becomes bigger, and it becomes worse. So then it becomes, keeps becoming so much bigger and bigger and bigger. You can't even scratch it afterwards. And still people are so addicted. That, you know, then they try to move their hand gently around the rash to get some pleasure. It's so pathetic. So that is, similarly people, you know, they have no strength to enjoy. Once I was in a hospital and this person was on saline. And with a saline, you know, in one hand he was reading a porn magazine. Pathetic, I felt like crying for that person. No strength. Even if the object comes, he can't enjoy. But still, what has happened? The desire is so strong, moving around their eyes, somehow trying to extract some pleasure. The whole situation becomes pathetic. This is not the freedom that an intelligent person wants. An intelligent person, he understands actually nobody is free. But there is a way to become truly free. What is that way? That way is to raise my consciousness. And it's like, say a person is fallen in a well, and he's fallen in the well, and somebody is in the well only hunting for enjoyment. Okay, so there's some object here, hunting. And because he's hunting, there is a little enjoyment somewhere in the well, but along with that, there's a lot of suffering. There are snakes and there are scorpions which are biting. But there's another person, he doesn't bother at all about the enjoyment of the well. What he does? He just catches the rope that is taking him out of the well. And the people who are in the well, they are saying, we are enjoying so much. Why are you catching on this well? You have to hold on so much. There is so much weight. See, your hand is straining. You are struggling. You are suffering and we are enjoying. Yes. You are enjoying, but how long? Soon I will be out of the well and I will be free. And you will still be bitten by the snakes and the scorpions. So, a devotee, he focuses on, not on enjoyment in the disease condition, but on becoming cured, becoming healed. And that's why he follows the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness. And these rules and regulations enable us to become purified so that we experience our own spiritual nature. The Atma is Satchitananda, but as long as the Atma identifies with the body is full of misery. So the Atma also experiences misery. And the more a person is addicted to enjoyment, he not only identifies with the body, he also identifies with the sense object. He identifies with the car, he identifies with the house. And then he becomes more and more alienated from his own blissful nature. But a devotee becomes more and more integrated with his blissful nature. Because he gives up the attachment. And therefore this is real freedom. So by chanting Hare Krishna and practicing Krishna consciousness, we cure the disease condition where the soul misidentifies with the body. And when the disease condition is cured, then there is real happiness. So, the real happiness will come when we become free from the desires that drag us away from the soul and drag our consciousness away from the soul and away from Krishna. And when our consciousness becomes fixed in Krishna, then there is real happiness. So I'll conclude with one point. Now within our heart, there is a tussle between two forces. Which are the forces? The centripetal force and the centrifugal force. The centripetal force is what is taking us towards Krishna, inwards. And the centrifugal is taking us away towards the sense objects, externally. Nate viduhu swartha gatim hi Vishnu durashayaye bahirarthamanina. So this verse describes these two forces. Nate viduhu swartha gatim hi Vishnu. That Vishnu, that Lord who is present, who is all pervasive and therefore is present in our heart. So instead of not understanding that he is my real self-interest, in him there is real happiness. Durashayaye bahirarthamanina. Bahirartha. Swartha and bahirartha. The previous verse Krishna says, Prahlad Maharaj says, Swartha. My Swartha is in Vishnu, in remembering him and satisfying him. But bahirarthamaya, no, I'm getting those objects. That will make me happy. But what is this? Durashaya. Durashaya means this is an asha which will never be satisfied. Durashaya. So, there are these two forces in our heart. And every action that we do, the action, if we enjoy externally, that means we are strengthening the external force. And if we try to absorb ourselves in the remembrance of Krishna, we are strengthening the inner force. So in the association of devotees, we may philosophically understand all this. That this is by going inwards, by going towards Krishna, I'll find real happiness. But this tussle will be there. And in the association of devotees, our centripetal force becomes stronger. And to the extent we go out of the association of devotees, the centrifugal force becomes stronger. Therefore, the more we associate with devotees, the more we strengthen this force. Then, at one time, this force will become so strong that even when we go out, we will not be affected by those who are after material desires. At that time, Prahlad Maharaj says, he says, Sochetato vimukha chetasa indriyarthan mayaya maya sukhaya bharamadvahato vimudan. He says, generally what maya makes us feel, that you are missing so much enjoyment. There is so much enjoyment available and you are missing so much enjoyment. What are you doing following all these rules and regulations? But once the centripetal force becomes strong and we start relishing Krishna consciousness, what is Prahlad Maharaj saying? He says, I don't feel that. Tvandvirya gayan mahamruta magna chitta. He says, there is so much nectar in glorifying you, my dear Lord. I am completely absorbed. And I am not feeling that I am missing something. I am feeling that they are missing what I am enjoying. And all these people, they are not able to relish the nectar of Krishna consciousness. And then such a person goes and shares Krishna consciousness with others. But till then, we have to fight this war. And in the association of devotees, we have to strengthen the centripetal force so that it can counteract and defeat the centrifugal force. And then, the stage of Prahlad Maharaj or the stage of Narada Muni, they can, even physically they are free. Narada Muni travels anywhere and everywhere in the universe. But he glorifies the Lord and he's completely free. That is the real freedom that the scriptures promise us. And that is the real freedom that a wise person should aspire for. So I'll summarize. He started first with how freedom is not opposed to freedom. Restriction is not opposed to freedom. It is prerequisite. Three examples. Person walking off a tall building wanting to drink poison and a deceased person wanting to eat heavy foods. So the freedom itself will go away if they do that. Then even if somebody says, okay, as long as I can, I will enjoy. But then the body restricts. What can you do? Then there are no rules and regulations. People think that freedom means unlimited access to the sense objects. But even if there is unlimited access, still the senses themselves are limited. Okay, then somebody will say that, I will enjoy as much as my senses allow. But then that binds the mind. And it becomes a torture. As a person becomes like a beggar, always wanting more and more and more. More than what he can have and more than what he can afford. More than what he can, even his body can enjoy. So that freedom like a beggar, or freedom like a football. where a person becomes like a snowball, initially small and controllable, but it becomes big and uncontrollable. So like a football means the same desire which he is first having, they control him and kick him from here and there. So therefore, real freedom comes by following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness. As a child first perceives the parents, don't play and study, as deprivation, then as protection, then as empowerment. Similarly, a devotee also sees the rules given by a Guru Sadhu Shastra. First as, initially we may perceive it as a restriction, but then we see that I am being protected, I am being empowered to experience happiness and to share happiness. And ultimately we will be free at a spiritual level to enjoy unlimitedly by remembering and serving Krishna. And even before that, in this life also we will be free at the mental level, we will not be tortured by temptations. And for this real freedom, discuss another example of a disease. In a disease condition, if somebody tries to enjoy, then it makes the disease worse and it prolongs it. But when a person becomes healthy, then he can really enjoy. So our condition now is like a disease condition. Now let us become healthy first. And then what is real health? Real health is what is described by Prahlad Maharaj. Then when we come to that stage, then rather than feeling that others, we are missing enjoyment, we feel others are missing the spiritual enjoyment that I am getting. So till then we have to counter the centrifugal force, the centripetal force, by associating with devotees. And then we will become fully free. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? One question. Yes. Can I, Dr. Prabhu, will add a few minutes now? We'll add for a few minutes.
It's already time. 7:24.
Yeah, 1 minute.
When we read Prabhupada book at the time, we should follow like this. But at the time of some opportunity for transmigration, forget. Afterwards we remember. Once we forget that what we learned.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Therefore, we have to forcibly remind ourselves. That means whenever the mind starts tempting us, the mind tricks us by making us consult the mind only. That means the mind tells us, okay, there is enjoyment. And we think, is there enjoyment? He says, yes, there is enjoyment. No, we have to actually have some book with us or have some notes with us where we can read and we can strengthen our intelligence. Otherwise, we will be bewildered. So, first thing is that we have to hear seriously and try to remember. And secondly, also have to create means of remembering. Whenever we go into areas of temptation, we should have some notes or some points written there. And even if we are not able to remember it internally, externally, something will remind us. So we have to remember. Some way or the other is essential. And of course, ultimately, matta smriti jnanam upon. So if we show Krishna our sincerity, that I want to remember. Now, this beautiful explanation of Matta Smriti Jnana Apohanam. Krishna says, I give knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So Krishna gives us knowledge through Guru Sadhu Shastra. And then depending on which desire predominates, we allow which desire to predominate. If we allow the desire to enjoy to predominate, then Krishna will give us Apohanam, he will give us forgetfulness. But if we maintain the desire to serve, then Krishna will give us remembrance. So we should try to, Krishna, I don't want just to hear it, but I want to apply it in my life. Yes, last question.
Ji, like when sometimes we practice very enthusiasm, strongness, but by like some period we become so weak or ill, in between ill, we become ill. That time our like enthusiasm, determination,
We should expect this. Just like if I eat food and get energy, then after 6 hours the energy goes away. Then what is the use of eating food? After 6 hours, the energy is going to be. No, 6 hours, the energy will be there, and after that, again, I have to take food. Same way, it is to be expected. That we hear some classes, we attend some programs or camps, and we become enthusiastic. And after some time, it goes down. Then again, we have to connect ourselves. Again, we have to attend some programs, or we have to read back those notes. Again, we have to nourish ourselves. See, as I was telling, the centrifugal and centripetal forces. So, the centrifugal force is being continuously nourished by the material energy. Like every holding, every sense object, every advertising, and that is continuously nourishing it. And now when we come in the association of devotees and attend some program, the centripetal force becomes nourished.
But then the battle is going on. And in the battle, say if one person is eating and other person not eating. So initially this will be stronger and crushing him, but over a period of time, they start crushing him. So this has to be continuously nourished.
But how you should feel in illness?
Yeah, illness is an opportunity to deepen our relationship with Krishna. Because often, ultimately the soul is related with Krishna. But in the sadhaka stage, we relate with Krishna through the body and the mind. For example, we do services for Krishna. But again, the body and the mind are not going to be there forever for us. When we grow old, our body will not be there with us. But the purpose is that, say, now I have eyes and I can see the deities. But when I offer my eyes in the service of the Lord by seeing the deities, eventually the purpose is that the Lord is there in my heart and I become purified and I see the Lord. Because even if whether I am a devotee or not, my eyes are going to go weak eventually. So we use the body and mind to connect ourselves with Krishna in our heart. And when the body is sick, then we try to connect directly even without the bodily connection. That's not possible very easily. But there are hearing and chanting. There are two main activities, there are two core activities of devotional service. And they are possible. Even in sickness. Maybe lesser time, maybe not so much quality, but sometimes the intensity can be much more. Because we understand that all my plans for making it big in this world, they are just helplessly foiled now. I have nothing to do. Just let me take shelter of Krishna. So in sickness, we can root our connection with Krishna, not through the body and the mind, but directly. And it's possible. Krishna will help us. Krishna will never put us in a situation where we will not be able to connect with Him. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Krishna Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki.